Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in a half hour, we'll talk with Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Get his perspective on what he saw from the Chiefs' first two games, and definitely want to follow back up on what he made of Kingsley Suamataia. We asked him last week, and I think he said he thought it was fine. Well, now we know he's coming off a rough performance. He got benched for Wanye Morris. We still, as of right this second, don't know for sure if Kingsley is starting on Sunday. Now, Andy and Patrick Mahomes are going to speak a little bit later on today. You'll hear that right here on 96.5 The Fan. So maybe we get some clarity there. But Ross Tucker is going to join us. Also, Josh Vernier coming up 12:30. A lot to get into with him because we are going to start today with the Royals. And I'm sensing some, not from them, but from fans, I'm sensing some panic today. I was at the game last night.
Pure panic.
I was at the game last night. People around us or whatever. Like, I'm sensing some panic, some worry that this could suddenly come crashing down. Today's a huge day to alleviate those concerns.
When, and I think you can fully wash away anything that happened over the last week, 2 weeks, last night, because the math is very simple. Win today, and you will now again be four games up in the wild card spot from the Tigers, 6 games up at the very least from the Mariners, with 9 games to play. That would mean, because of the tiebreaker that the Royals do possess over the Tigers, if they went 2-7 over the final 9 games, the Tigers would have to go 7-2 in order to take their playoff spot away. Little bit of a hiccup in the game tonight. Alec Marsh is starting for the Royals. He's done a nice job for them. But as you remember, was sent down to the minors so that they could start Lorenzen and protect his innings. On the other side, it just happens to be the American League Cy Young favorite and future winner, Tarik Skubal, going for the Tigers. And so after back-to-back losses in which both games could have been won by the Royals, I understand that they're panicked, because if they lose today, then they're only 2 games up and the whole catching the Royals thing becomes a whole lot easier.
Exactly. And, you know, we can mention what the Tigers have to do, and it sounds so difficult, you know, 7-3. It's not though, Cody. You know, like, that's what's scary about it is
they got the White Sox for 3.
Well, they have the White Sox for 3 and the Rays for 3. So 6 of their remaining 10 games are going to be against those squads. And I'll just fill you in. The last 10 games, the Tigers are what? 8-2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've done it.
I'll tell you right now, the rest of the year, I bet they didn't go 8-2 in 10-game stretches twice this year.
That doesn't mean a damn thing anymore, though. You know this. Like, that doesn't mean we've talked all offseason, or not all offseason, post-All-Star break, the Tigers have been basically the best team in baseball. Do I think ultimately the Royals are still making the postseason? I do. Do I understand the concern and panic? Yeah, knowing today's pitching matchup, this is not the matchup you would like in a deciding game to at least to snap this four game losing streak here pretty soon. And that's why yesterday was so important to get a win, and they didn't. Cole Reagans gives you 7 innings, gives up 1 run on what, 4 hits.
That's supposed to be a win.
That's an outing that of course you feel great about. And it was missed opportunity after missed opportunity again yesterday. I felt like yesterday was another game. It's one of probably 3 that have stood out post Vinny Pasquantino injury where you're like, okay, wow.
If he was on the team, you win.
You're really feeling it because teams aren't giving Bobby Witt Jr. or Salvi much of a shot to do anything smartly. Yeah, Bobby got on base, 3 times? He had 3 walks. That's great. But
they're real careful with Bobby.
You don't have anybody behind them that they're fearful of. And I know Massey had the one RBI, the only run that came from him yesterday. But we also know there were some other opportunities. He comes up to the plate. Some other guys
bases loaded.
You know, just some brutal plate appearances at times. And so this team is now going to make us sweat. That's what's changed for this is going to be a sweat. If you thought, you know what, man, there's a chance at Kauffman on Sunday, Cody, they could clinch a playoff spot. Yeah, that's not happening. The magic number is still 8.
It did not move.
It can get to 6 if you pull off an upset today, and it's baseball. I mean, yes, it looks like a daunting pitching matchup, but it's weird. It's baseball. It wouldn't surprise me if somehow they won today, because it makes no sense why they would win today and lose yesterday, but that's baseball. But if they don't, things get really dicey, man, heading into the weekend if they don't win today.
Of course. And they've gotten Scooble each of the last 2 times, so I can't predict the future for you. They've gotten the most runs out of Scooble based on ERA than any team in baseball this year. They've been better against the future American League Cy Young Award winner than any other team in baseball this season, including tagging him for 9 runs over the last 2 starts he's gone against him. I'll just tell you, it's just as likely he throws 7 shutout innings because he's very good. So I'm not going to, and the Royals don't have Vinny Pasquantino in the lineup like they would have each of the last 2 times that they faced him. But baseball is weird. And what's funny is, like, to be on this edge is, you don't have to feel that way if any time, today would help. Today would erase it all. And then I think we could come in here on Thursday and be like, come on, it's fine. See? Playoff team. But if there's any game over the next 3 games in which the Royals win and the Tigers lose, I mean, they're going to run into problems, because still, the biggest Royals friend is time. Time. It's on their side. And we still know all the same things we know about the Royals. They're going to have to hit with runners in scoring position, something they ranked in the top 5 in all of baseball this season for a long time. But lately, not going so well.
And that was when Vinny Pasquantino was in the lineup.
Well, and that's so why he was going to be 100 RBI guy. Salvi is, and so is Bobby. But
who's going to be the guy that steps up? I mean, that's whether it's in October is one thing if they get there, and I think they still will. But that's going to have to happen if you think they're going to make any sort of run then. But right now they need that over the next 10 games. They need somebody to be able to step up in that, because I don't think, unfortunately, anybody's going to allow it to be Bobby Witt Jr. or Salvador Perez.
Sure.
It's going to have to be, whether it's Massey, Renfro, when Melendez is in the lineup, I guess Tommy Pham to a certain extent too. Like, it's going to have to be somebody like that to get runs across, because it's evident with what we just saw the last 2 games against the Tigers, and smartly, like, they're not idiots. Like, they are not going to let Bobby Witt Jr. beat them. And that's the right strategy right now with what's going on with the rest of the lineup. And in today against Scooble, like, you got to somehow figure out how you're going to piece this one together today too, because who's available? Let's say Alec Marsh doesn't give you a nice outing today. Urseg pitched 30. He's not available today.
Nope.
I don't know if Bubic is or not either. We'll see.
He has only pitched. So for a while, they weren't letting him pitch on back-to-back days. They have done that more late in the season. So I would say it's possible that Chris Bubic is available, but it probably depends on the start. We know that James McCarthy, they're not even going to throw him, so it's probably Schreiber in the close tonight. Does that sound right? Like, if they're up 3-2 in the ninth, it's probably Schreiber. They're not going to have to just get to Scooble. They're going to have to get to him early. The problem over the last 2 games is they lost 2 days ago because of their pitching, because the starting wasn't good from Lugo, and the bullpen was even worse. So even though they got a Bobby Witt Jr. grand slam, they lost because they're pitching. Yesterday is the exact opposite. They lost because they're hitting. One run with the bases loaded in back-to-back innings, and they win the game in 9, and we don't have to go to extra innings or do all this nonsense.
913-586-7965. We're off to a great start today. That's a good sign. Wait till the 1 o'clock hour. We'll see if the voice is still around or not. 913-586-7965. Not good. I swear I wasn't even yelling at the game last night. This is a 3-day in the making.
They only scored 1 run. There wasn't a lot to yell about.
There was not, and honestly, I did not have a single alcoholic beverage yesterday.
Are you telling the truth?
100%.
Lie detector?
I can give you the individual that I was with the game with last night.
I can't trust your friends to vouch for you. They'll just lie for you.
No, I was dollar dog night. I had 2 hot dogs, a bag of peanuts, and 2 souvenir-sized Dr. Peppers. The voice was already starting to go away Sunday. Anyway, someone on the text line said, hey, you guys were way too confident about them making the playoffs. I still think they're making
the
playoffs.
Math is on their side still.
They have a 93% chance still to make the playoffs, according to multiple of the projection sites. If you're wondering, the Guardians, of course, have a 100% chance to make it. The Twins have an 82.7. And believe it or not, the Tigers still only have a 21% chance. Now, does that switch after today. Sure, it goes from 93 probably to like 89 or 88% after today if the Royals lose. Now, if they win, that 93 becomes like 96 or 97% is my guess. So it's a huge game today. I understand the worry and the panic because this thing, you know, you thought this weekend could have been a weekend.
You didn't want to have a sweat.
And now it's going to be a sweat. They're not going to make it easy on everybody.
If they win tonight, it's not. And I understand the heavy lifting of that because someone is, again, going to point out, like, you remember, right, that Skubal is, yes, I understand. I'm not saying it's not a sweat for a good reason, but it's just not a sweat. What are the implied odds? Do you got the calculator on that? Right now, like, let's take out the baseball references of the world.
Wow,
DraftKings, if you wanted to bet it, yeah. They're minus 2,000 to make the playoffs right now. Like, I mean, what's the implied odds of that? I mean, it's the same number, right? I mean, 80, 90%. The reason why we're confident is it was going to take an
epic... You said minus 2,000?
Yeah. It was going to take an epic collapse.
95.2.
Okay. It was going to take an epic collapse from the Royals and a hell of a run by the Tigers in order to do it. Okay, so far, they're getting a little bit of their timeshare, right? Tigers have won 8 of their last 10, including beating the Royals in 2 straight games. So they've made this thing closer. And then still, even after this, for the remainder of the season, in order to pass the Royals have to go 3-7, and the Tigers have to go 7-3, which means the Tigers can't let off the gas at all. Not even for a second, not even for the moment.
But they've been playing.
And if the Royals even go close to 500, I know.
I hear you, but.
But the Royals haven't lost seven of their last 10 either.
I understand. No, and that's why you and I are both saying I think they're still making the playoffs. But like, I guess my issue is maybe the Twins actually should be really concerned, right?
You know, they should be feeling the heat more than the Royals.
Let's remember, they're in between the Tigers and the Royals, so they're the team I think that should be really concerned about the Tigers catching them. And I think there's a chance the Tigers ultimately do catch them. But I'm just saying that like we got to stop acting like there's no way the Tigers can do blank. They've been playing the Tigers to the sure. Post All-Star break have been the best team in baseball. They've won 8 out of their last 10. So I think it's a little silly knowing their schedule. Also, White Sox and Rays acting like, well, they can't go 7-3. You sure? Absolutely. They can. I don't think the Royals are going to lose their playoff spot because of them. I think if I'm the Twins who are still in between the two, that's who's most concerning. That's the buffer you still have. And that buffer gets, you know, slimmer and slimmer as the Royals losing streak continues. And that's why you can't. If I told you in a month and a half span, you have two, you know, 5+ game losing streaks. And that would be obviously a very bad sign and would kick you out. So that's what can't happen. They got to let this losing streak stop at either 3 today or on Friday. Your damn well has to stop at 4.
Yeah.
Because they have an off day tomorrow.
It's a pretty bad matchup.
The Twins, today. If you're wondering about
Tigers
them.
Tigers are off tomorrow too, by the way.
The Twins have two more against the Guardians. You should be rooting for the Guardians, okay? The division is done. So
yes.
You should be rooting for the Guardians to beat the Twins today and tomorrow. Then the Twins have the Red Sox, the Marlins, and then they wrap up with the Orioles. That'll be a significant series one way or the other at the final 3 games of the season. So the Twins should be the team that actually is most concerned about this Tigers development.
Because that's the whole part about, like, because someone said, yeah, I mean, it is kind of silly if you're not confident in them, is I think I'd feel different if they were in the final playoff spot. There's still technically a team between them. Like, and by the way, they can't even, like, lose their spot today to the team behind them. Like, I'll feel different tonight. I will. Like, today, I'm fine. I'm unconcerned. Thursday, we might be having a different conversation to open the show because as of right now, they can't lose their lead to the Twins today. They can't, you know, they can't fall out of the second playoff spot. Twins could still lose today to the Guardians, and then there's still a game, and there's still a space. Like, I might feel a lot different tomorrow, but as it sits right now, they're still in good position. Like, if the Royals were chasing, if the Royals were the Tigers right now and playing really good baseball, I'd be excited about the possibility they could catch them. But there's still a lot of heavy lifting left to do.
Well, I think the Tigers are going to catch the Twins. The Tigers are making the playoffs, Cody. I think the Twins are the team that's going to get knocked out.
I think I kind of agree with you. I think
the Tigers, I think the Guardians are winning the division, of course. I think the Royals are going to be the second wild card. And I think the Detroit Tigers will be the third and final wild card spot. I think Minnesota, after all this, is going to be the team that gets bounced. Because what we just said about where they're at, they don't have the cushion at all. And the Royals' cushion is getting thinner and thinner, but they don't have it at all if you're the Minnesota Twins. And it's a schedule thing. You know, I'm not saying it's a guarantee that the Tigers sweep the White Sox at the end of the season.
It's at least a 70% chance,
right?
They're
getting two out of three, I think, in fairness, at minimum. I mean,
to get a sweep.
Chicago's been ready for Cancun for a while, but boy, you know, the final series of the season, oh my goodness. they have already checked in for their flights by the time that series starts.
Did you happen to read Jeff Passan's article? So Jeff Passan decided, because it was a historically bad season for the White Sox, he went and spent an entire weekend with the White Sox trying to figure out just what went poorly. And he was like, he was talking about the like acceptance of being a really terrible team and what it means to be at that level constantly. But just as a reminder, baseball does still exist. So in their last, let's go through the last five series. They weren't swept by the Angels. They weren't swept by the A's. They were swept by the Guardians. They weren't swept by the Red Sox. They weren't swept by the Orioles. They weren't swept by the Mets. So the White Sox stink. I'm not claiming they don't stink, but they don't get swept all the time. They were swept in the two previous years. But before that, lately, they've been winning one. So, I mean, look, odds would still tell you you're probably going to win two out of three 100% of the time. Three out of three, 75% chance, 70% chance. That's fine. But that still means they have to win the other games before that. And I understand. Then I'm just saying, can you go 4-3 over the next seven games? Probably doesn't seem like a huge stretch for the Tigers based on the way that they're actively playing. But they have no margin. They slip up once. They slip up today. Tarik Skubal feels a hamstring tighten up or gives up one oopsie home run to Hunter Renfroe. And then the conversation shifts completely in the Royals' favor later. On the other side of the Truman Sports Complex, one thing that seems to be at, we've been doing the show 5 years. I'm going to guess that this is a main talking point for us for four of those years. The continued concern over red zone success for the Kansas City Chiefs. They're still just bad there. And I guess part of it is, like, I'm tired of watching them be bad there, because for all these times that we say the Chiefs play closer games than they need to, well, a lot of those could be resolved by simply being able to get the ball in the end zone from the 2-yard line for the three previous attempts so that Andy's not tempted to again kick a field goal on 4th-and-1 from the 1-yard line. What is it about this team in short yardage and goal and red zone stuff that continues to plague them?
Yeah, it's a long-standing thing, no doubt. And you just lost Isaiah Pacheco, who, of course, is a big weapon for you in the red zone. That's not going to give you much more confidence. The one thing 2 weeks in the season that we've seen, though, across the entire NFL and why it's like, okay, not much different than everybody else so far, is that just 9 teams in the entire league have actually converted over 50%.
So it's pretty bad
of
right now
their
everybody.
Red zone drives into touchdowns. If you're wondering how that compares to a year ago, through two games, it was 20 of the 32 teams. So it is down significantly. This is why offense is down so far early on. Teams
touchdowns
across the entire league are converting less of their red zone drives into touchdowns than they did a year ago through two games. By a wide margin, only 9 teams have done that. So the Chiefs are in the majority, actually, of the league right now in terms of their red zone success. I'm not saying you should be thrilled about it, but just let's keep that in mind. Kind of everybody is struggling right now.
So you're just saying lump it in, wash it away for a week, and then let's see what
happens against the Falcons on Sunday night.
Zach Jackson, who covers, by the way, Cleveland, he was around Kareem Hunt. Maybe that's a possible answer. He says that Hunt's a red zone guy.
He had multiple touchdown games, and that's what he is. He's a red zone finisher. He is a 3rd-and-1.5, he's going forward to get it. So, you know, I think he slowed down. You know, I don't think he's the same player. But the last I saw of Kareem Hunt, he was not overweight. He was in shape. He was anxious. So I do not believe that he's going to give the Chiefs a 45-yard touchdown round this Sunday night, right? But over the course of the next month, I'll be surprised if he doesn't give the Chiefs some 1-yard touchdown runs.
Now, remember, he's starting on the practice squad, so
It could be
2 weeks before potentially he even is available, or at least this not fully 2 weeks. You guys would get what I'm saying. Second game of this upcoming stretch. It could be the Chargers game before he's maybe off the practice squad, best case scenario, and reasoned expectations. But yeah, on the short yardage, it's 2nd-and-goal from the 1. Usually that's a Pacheco carry. I'm still thinking, unless he really struggles on Sunday, I still think those are Carson Steele carries. And I know he's a rookie. Kareem Hunt will get some of them, but I also believe Carson Steele is going to have an opportunity in those specific short yardage situations too.
I think that he will. I'm actually kind of fascinated to see the way they play it out, because Carson Steele will get his chance to be the short yardage guy over the next couple of weeks. But if the same problem persists in the red zone that we've seen and they don't convert, well, then I don't know why they wouldn't give Kareem Hunt a chance in those short yardage situations. Now, when I said, like, I think I tweeted in the middle of the game on Sunday, Carson Steele should be the short yardage back for this team. Well, I said that before Pacheco got hurt and before I knew Kareem Hunt was going to be a possible option for them in the short yardage. I guess the part that frustrates me is this is as good as I think they've had it in 3 years with targets that should work in the red zone. They have Rashee Rice, who works in that short yardage, body people out, jump over their head type guy. That's who he was in college. Travis Kelce's always been a very good red zone threat. Samaje Perine's been good in the red zone. You would think that, and even just like the speed capabilities of getting Xavier Worthy to an edge or McColl's ability to score touchdowns over the course of his NFL career, they seem to me to have some guys who have been pretty effective in the red zone, and yet I'm staring down the barrel of the same thing again. That's only two games, I'm not sent into a panic, but I would like to see some red zone improvement over the next month or so.
Sure.
To feel like it's not going the way it has over the last 2 years.
But a lot of the guys you just mentioned there, like, this is the balance and where it's, you know, the criticism that happens. If it works, it's creative and it's unbelievable play calling. If it doesn't, we call it way too cute. I still think there's some element, and it's just not Andy Reid style, where people are like, hey, it'd be nice to be able to go single back and just hand the ball off to your running back and your offensive line can get pushed and sure, you score from the 2 yard line.
Sure.
Instead, you know, like, they did full house formation. Leo Chanel's out there blocking as a fullback, and that's fine. I'm not saying you can't do that, but it has been a very long time since you've just been able to say, you know what, I'm just going to hand it to my running back and the offensive line is going to get enough push without having to do anything quote unquote cute. But as I said, we view it differently. If it works, it's all of a sudden the most creative play call from Andy Reid. And if it doesn't, we call it too cute, in fairness. And that's just the reality. I also think Mecole Hardman, a lot of those opportunities in the red zone, they can just run the same plays with Xavier Worthy.
Sure.
Like, we saw it in the week one game.
That exact 22
yards from Worthy, that was a play we had seen them run with Mecole Hardman in the past. Those plays are now his plays.
And Hollywood should have factored into this, and now he doesn't. And Pacheco's a good touchdown scorer, now he won't. So I'm not saying it should just be fixed overnight. I actually looked it up. They're 20th right now in red zone touchdown scoring percentage. They were 19th last year over the course of the season. 2022, they were a lot better than I thought. They were third. Like, they got the ball in the end zone. They were 12th the year before that. So it's been a consistent problem, but it's not a problem that
wasn't 2022 the year where Travis had a ridiculously high number of touchdowns. I mean, I'm assuming a lot of those were Kelce red zone touchdowns.
I was going to say, I think that's something that I would look for. I know that he targeted him the one time in the red zone, and as Nate said
Trey Smith maybe for it.
As Nate said yesterday, he was wide open on Wanya's touchdown, but I wonder if he'll be, because I think that was part of the conversation going into the season was, I obviously now they don't have Hollywood and everything, but they have more than just Rashee. It opens up a little bit for Travis to potentially get more of those targets again, like in 22 in the red zone, sure, because there's more attention on other guys. Just hasn't quite materialized like that yet.
The problem is that there's not attention on other guys yet until other guys prove that they're going to be touchdown scorers. And if they're not, if they're going to be 20th in the NFL, well, then they can triple team Travis Kelce near the goal line and kind of mess with things a little bit. My problem is, like, and I, you know, it's so funny with the interior offensive line. It's like, how can you have the league's best interior offensive line and not be able to get a damn yard? Why can't they just run it up the middle? But this comes back to the same thing. I don't want to get back stuck in a conversation. I'm like, you know what they could do hypothetically to get a yard is QB sneak.
That's
ball.
Not allowed. It's not allowed. You know that.
And I understand.
You know, that's just not allowed.
It is. The rules in the NFL still actually
not in the rules, of, the rules of Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes. It is not allowed, actually.
It's amazing.
It is not it's allowed. Amazing. We are not going to see that as long as he's coaching Mahomes. We've always said, we're like, oh, well, they're in the Super Bowl. They've been in a lot of these Super Bowls. I don't know if you noticed, and they're still not doing them then.
Well, I don't think they're going big enough. Instead of Leo Chenal being the lead back, let's bigger guy. I want, like, Karloftis, Chris Jones.
You want Pinnell in there.
I want Mike Pinnell. I want a bigger person running fullback. Chanel's pretty big. I want an even bigger body person running.
I don't need Karloftis or Chris Jones getting hurt on an offensive play.
Fine, Pinnell.
Sure. Sorry, Mike. I mean, but
Leo's a pretty important player too.
He is, especially with the way the linebacker is going right now. Yeah, it's the athletic. Leo's got a little more athleticism there. someone has suggested something that we have suggested in the past on the text line while you're on the QB sneak thing. He said, well, just put Carson Wentz. Said it about Blaine Gabbert or whatever a year ago.
It's
the same thing. And it'd be like, well, the teams would know you're doing it. It would still work.
Who cares? They know when Jalen Hurts is doing it. It hasn't stopped them from being successful.
So we, this is a longstanding conversation. They're just not going to do a QB sneak with Mahomes. Yes, would I be fine with them just bringing in Carson Wentz for a play? Totally. But that's they're not doing it. They're not doing it, man.
That might be the
But he runs all the time.
I know. But this
all the time.
I know.
Like just all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He gets hit in the pocket. He doesn't avoid injury like he avoids injury, but like he can be hit. Like any other person.
That would be the most frustrating thing to me is we saw them go 8 yard carry, 8 yard carry, 7 yard carry, and then it's 30.
It's harder to score there. I mean, that's every team.
I know, but you've got the ball on the 2 yard line against a team that stinks at run defense, and you have the best interior offensive line in the league. Everybody knows you're doing it, but like you said, that doesn't stop you from. It is amazing.
I see teams every week hand the ball off the 1 yard line and go inside the end zone.
But their quarterback,
it's amazing.
Their quarterback did not have a freak knee. Cap or whatever it was pop out against the Denver Broncos head coach being the same head coach.
So Hollywood Brown had a freak injury. He's not allowed to run a hitch anymore.
I mean,
he can't run a hitch now because he got hurt on a hitch and accidentally hurt his shoulder.
No more slants.
I don't disagree with you, but also I don't have to explain to you why that's a very different example. I like Hollywood Brown as well. It's a little bit difference of the risk of him getting hurt and what the team looks like versus Mahomes. Would I still do QB sneaks with Patrick Mahomes? Of course I would. But you also know there's a big difference between they're protecting him versus any other player, literally any other player on the roster.
The injury history of the quarterback sneak in the NFL. I can get 10 years worth of data. Mm-hmm. I can pull up every quarterback sneak in the entire time, and I'm probably only going to find Patrick Mahomes' injury once. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to find a single other time in which a quarterback was hurt on a QB sneak. Like, it doesn't exist. The math supports just doing it. I know he's not going to, so we don't have to
get we've done this for 3 years or whatever years ago.
But, it was funny because I felt this way a little bit more after Sunday's game because I wanted to go for it on fourth and a lot of other people, but that goes back to the week before for me, why they didn't go for it on fourth and four. It's the same level of conservativeness where both situations are a go. Plain and simple. Both are a go. The math supports a go. You can get 4 yards with Mahomes. They both say go. And I understand once slightly even more of a go because you're only 1 yard away from 6 points, not 1 yard away from continuing a drive, but they're both a go. And I just
And Andy's reasoning was he's
so aggressive in everything he does.
Andy's reasoning was they didn't get a yard when they were down there already in three plays and they wanted points. The ball's on the half yard
and they won.
Though.
So I can't, sure. They won both games and I wanted them to go.
And that's the ultimate trump card that he has on everything, right? Yeah. I mean, that's
on the sneaks.
I'm not saying you can't be critical of decision making. We are. But man, the ultimate trump card is the multiple rings and the fact that this team is probably going to win 13, 14 games. And
he's a back-to-back Super Bowl champion.
They're the favorite. So, I'll go ahead and take, if that's the case, I'll go ahead and take the frustration with not doing a quarterback sneak. If that's the trade-off, every other fan base would take that as well. Up next, though, let's get a national perspective on what the Chiefs looked like, plus a former player's perspective on Tua going to the IR and whether or not he's going to play in the NFL again. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, joins us.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Next. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to some comments by a couple college football coaches that caught our attention in particular. One thing that has been going on for a while in college football, but a certain coach thinks it's a brand new thing. We'll explain that in just a little bit. But let's go out to the hotline and welcome in our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, where our calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. And Ross, we'll get to your thoughts on the Chiefs and, of course, what they did against Cincinnati, in particular, what Kingsley's performance looked like after getting pulled from the game. But I wanted your player perspective on the situation in Miami. You were at the game for Westwood One last Thursday when Tua, of course, went out with a concussion. We saw the very scary situation yet again. He's going to IR. I think it's easy for me to just sit here and say, all right, dude, just take the money, retire, walk away. But you played the game, and I can't imagine being in that situation when that's your entire life and that's all you've done. What were you at on that situation?
Yeah, it's such a good point because, you know, I have such a different perspective now that I'm 45 and have a couple of kids and have realized that life can be really rewarding and really fruitful after football. You know, that's a lot easier to say now than it is when you're in your 20s and it's been your identity your entire life. Now, my situation was different than Tua's. I was 28. It was my seventh year, and I hurt my neck against the Ravens. I herniated my C5, C6, bruised a spinal cord. And I said to the doctor, you know, what do you think? And he said, I think you're 28 and you went to Princeton. You should get a real job. Which, by the way, shout out to Dr. Schuller. I still haven't gotten a real job.
No, just this fake one.
Yeah, but in all sincerity, it was such a weird situation because on the one hand, it was like I felt relief. Because, guys, I would have kept playing until no team wanted me or until a doctor said I shouldn't play anymore. So in the same instant, I felt a small sense of relief that it was almost like, okay, this is one of the ways I could retire, is if a doctor told me it was time. But then at the exact same moment, a total loss of identity. You know how there's always guys that are like, you know, football is what I do, but it's not who I am. And like, they go out of your way. They go out of their way to tell you all their other interests. So, I mean, I had other interests. I did internships when I was in the NFL and stuff, but I liked that my identity was being a football player. I always wanted to be a football player. My first memory was going to a Penn State game when I was 5 years old. And I said to my parents, this is what I'm going to do. And so it's kind of crazy to just snap your fingers and that's over. It's over. You know, for 20 years, people look at you as a football player. They say, there's Ross Tucker, the football player, whatever. And then it's just over. And so I think that's a tough perspective for someone like Tua, who ostensibly will have a choice to make here. But I would also say, you know, he's achieved lifetime financial security now, right? So I think you have to take a really long look at why he would still be playing. So because the game ends, I think the further you removed you get from it, you realize that the game ends for everybody at some point. Most people, it's when they're 18. You know, a little bit more, a less group, it's like when they're 22. And then a lot of us in our 20s, some people in their 30s, and then like a couple guys in their 40s. So if you operate with the parameter that it's going to end at some point, and then you realize you've achieved financial security, then you have to really ask yourself, why would he still be playing? Like, would he still be playing for the love of the game? I mean, that sounds good, but, you know, you don't want to put that ahead of the love of your wife and two children, like Tua has. Would you be playing to, like, to win a championship? I would love to have a long conversation with him and just hear the way he's thinking about it or what he's looking at. I can tell you, 45-year-old, like my brain, I would definitely not play again if I were him. I'd like to think that if I were 26 and in his shoes, I would not play anymore. I would think better of it, but I don't know that for sure.
When you look at the rest of the league, some of this is because quarterbacks like Tua aren't available. But I've been reading all about it, Ross, trying to figure out what's been going on with the league-wide offensive problem. So somebody suggested it's just the cover two defenses, and I've seen someone suggest it's a step further than that. It's the way these offenses set aside their plan to attack them this year and why that plan is just straight up not working. What do you attribute it to? No one's scoring touchdowns. Everyone's bad in the red zone. Offense is down across the board. Why do you think it is?
I think it's, I mean, as always, a number of factors. Number one, I would say there's a general trend year after year of less time in the preseason, less practice, with an emphasis on putting a premium on as healthy as possible for the opener. And that's fine, but that does come at a cost, I think, a little bit of precision and efficiency. In general, early in seasons, defenses are going to be ahead of offenses, and I think that's especially pronounced with the less work that these offenses are getting. You know, what I tell people all the time is, on defense, you can have a couple guys screw up, but if Derek Thomas gets a sack or Chris Jones gets sacked, like, nobody even notices. On offense, if any one guy screws up, and you guys saw this a bunch against Cincinnati, if any one guy screws up, that play is not going to work. And so I think especially early, you know, given the lack of continuity, chemistry, practice time, all those things, you're going to have more offenses where one guy messes up. There's a penalty or he gets beat or whatever, doesn't run the right route. And so the offensive play is ineffective as a result. I would also say, and I first started to hear this like 3 or 4 years ago, all of the data, all of the analytics now suggests that by far, the two biggest determining factor in the outcome of games. One is turnovers. We all kind of already knew that. The other one is explosive plays. So these defensive coordinators, they are obsessed with limiting explosive plays. One reason, by the way, why a lot of teams are running it pretty effectively. You know, it used to be, you got to stop the run. You got to stop the run. Now it's like, hey, you know what? Why do you have to stop the run? I mean, it's nice to stop the run. But what you really have to do is you have to stop points and you have to stop explosive plays. And so teams are doing a pretty darn good job of that.
We're talking to Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. Our Insider call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. So the Chiefs are 2-0. We all would acknowledge they have not played their best football. They continue to find ways to win. Patrick Mahomes wasn't sharp in the win. And coming out of that game, the biggest story, honestly, other than the injury to Pacheco, is what they're doing at left tackle. We asked you last week about Kingsley, and now I'm curious to get your perspective on his performance that got him pulled from the game in favor of Wanya Morris. And as of right now, Andy Reid has not committed to who's going to be left tackle on Sunday night.
Well, there's a bunch there. I mean, one of which is just body language. It felt like Kingsley was losing his confidence during the game. It's a really bad spot for an offensive lineman to be in. Really bad, and it's understandable. He's a young player. He's a rookie. first real taste of the NFL, and he's going against a guy in Trey Hendrickson who's very, very good. Now, I was a little bit disappointed and thought the Chiefs could have done more, especially early in the game, to help Kingsley, to help him settle in, to help him build some confidence, because I do think he has the talent and athletic ability to be able to do it. But now you have to wonder where he's at mentally and whether or not they're better off going with Wanya Morris. And, you know, I mean, if you can get a left tackle like Wanya that scores a touchdown, you know, every week, that is really helpful.
Well, but if he's starting, then he can't catch touchdowns, you know. Ross, you're taking that away from him.
No, I thought he looked okay when he got out there. I would imagine, we'll see. They don't want to ruin Kingsley mentally, but I think you could ruin Kingsley mentally either way, right? You bench him, that's tough, he doesn't start. But if you throw him right back out there and he struggles again, then that's not good either. So they're in a unique situation there. The thing I would tell you is you can scheme offensively to protect someone or protect a position. Now, you're going to lose some other things as a result, right? Like if you slide to the left tackle every time, well, then, you know, Juwan Taylor and Trey Smith are going to be one-on-one, and the defense is going to know it, and that puts more stress on them. Or if you're going to have, you know, Kelsey or Samaje Perine chip, well, that helps, but then you're going to have a guy late getting out to his route. So there's a give and take with everything. I just think I would start that with securing the block for the left tackle before you worry about anything else.
When you look at the – so I don't disagree, but I guess the one other thing I want to ask about Kingsley is Mitchell Schwartz, former offensive tackle here, Andy, and even Kingsley himself seemed to think it was more of a technique problem than a skill issue, talking about the way he uses his arms in order to defend those guys. Is that an easy fix, in your opinion, in the middle of the season? Can you change technique things that would make you better in that area?
You can definitely get better with your technique, but it's not like an overnight success. It's not as easy as people think. And you could watch any play and you could say, you know, if that guy had better technique, he wouldn't have gotten beat. I mean, what separates a lot of guys in the NFL, like Mitchell, for example, is his technique was, like, impeccable. You know, I mean, Kingsley's a better physical specimen, height, weight, speed, all those things, athleticism, than Mitchell was. But Mitchell was a technician. You know, so it's easy to say, oh, if he just gets his technique better. I mean, yeah, if I got my technique better, I would have been a better player, and I worked on it every day, seemingly all day, but I still never got it where I wanted it to be. You know, I still never got it to the level where I could have been the type of player that I wanted to be. So I think on some level, yes, you can improve technique, and yes, some of it was technique. I didn't like his set, but he was turning his shoulders too early. But that's also what happens when you get beat, and I don't know that he's going to be able to fix it that quickly.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, he joins us every Wednesday throughout the NFL season. We appreciate it, man. We'll be checking in next week.
Yeah, sounds great. Great talk with you guys.
There you go. Ross Tucker is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart for grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season.
A little injury update in the NFL, just so you know. Jim Harbaugh just spoke to the media, saying Justin Herbert is listed on today's injury report with an ankle injury suffered during the Panthers game. It is on the same foot that his plantar fascia that kept him out for training camp is on. He said his practice status is to be determined. When trying to press him a little bit to find out if he was going to play in the Steelers, Daniel Popper said, crystal ball, I expect him to get better every day. I was just in a meeting with him, said he was feeling much better and good today. When asked who would start, he said, right now it's Easton Stick if Herbert couldn't go. But we're way over the, as he said, legal limit for what ifs. So we'll see if whether or not Justin Herbert.
How many times did he say today in there?
It's not just another day. It's today.
Every day, today, good today, right now, Easton Stick, legal limit. Pretty much a classic Harbaugh thing.
I was going to say the legal limit thing. That's an interesting analogy.
So we'll see. Keep an eye out on Justin Herbert. Back to what Ross Tucker said about the offense. I am trying to figure this out because I've seen a number of theories. And I actually think the best working theory on it is that defenses have allowed for teams to run the ball, which is working. But the counter offenses have had to an entire season of watching the cover two is not. This plan of we're going to run it 20 times and then we're going to be efficient in the passing game and we're going to take what the defense gives us is actually a mistake. The team should not always be running in these light box situations. And instead, they are still going to have to aggressively go after these defenses because there's no other explanation outside of the norm for that that would suggest that this is going well. The league-wide counter to this, to the defenses they face for now the better part of a year, is not working. And if there's, I'll be honest, one coach in the NFL I expect to make that adjustment in season well, it's probably Andy. I bet he'll figure it out first, and then everyone else will go about copying it. And by week 9, offenses will look about the normal amount of good against defenses that we expect. But right now, this is not a Chiefs problem. This is a league-wide issue on offense.
That's part of it. I also think every year, early on, it's worse this year. That's why it's getting discussed even more. But Ross's point, something we had brought up before as well, is that, of course, there's going to be issues with teams' performances in September if you're going to basically throw in the towel on preseason, if you're going to have a quote-unquote softer training camp. It's not just that, hey, the CBA is so different that, you know, long time ago there were two-a-days and things like that. But I'm just talking about like some of the newer coaches in the league, Zach Taylor, even Sean McVay. I mean, majority of the coaches in the league, the younger coaches, do not play starters in preseason. They don't. And so it's not a surprise then when they struggle. There's some extreme examples. We talked all last week about Cincinnati and their September struggles. There's other teams that haven't reached that point but are still struggling in September. And so it takes some time. And I think we're just seeing it coupled with where the quarterback play is in the league right now. As we said last week, you know, we always talk about the bottom five in the league. It's like the bottom 10 or so, if we're really being honest with ourselves, with some of the quarterback play that you're seeing. And then there's a rash of injuries. All of it's contributed. I mean, it's not just quarterback injuries.
Way down.
Not just quarterback injuries. There's some star players that are hurt very early on in the season. And so you're seeing the ramifications to that.
I think that in a way, the way that it's turning into now, it looks like college football almost. Is the first week or two of the season, a lot of the unders always are hitting because defenses have the edge and you see sloppy quarterback play all the time. And then it takes a little bit until we get into week 3, 4, 5 for things to really start clicking for college. It's almost turning into that where obviously college doesn't have a preseason. You're not playing guys in the preseason. So the output of offensive statistics is less in the first few weeks than what it's going to be in week 7, 8, 9 and further.
Worth monitoring over the next couple of weeks. We'll see how it goes. Your favorite guy in college football was talking. Aren't you Dion fan at the station?
No, that's Dusty.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dusty.
And I'm the guy who owns the Colorado hoodie, not hoodie season.
Dusty
yet
has the Coach Prime hoodie.
Yeah, he does.
I think he still wears it.
Iron hard to find. Or what, I think that's what his says. But yeah.
Did you hear what he had to say about college athletes?
Oh,
this is Deion Sanders. He was speaking to the media yesterday and started accusing us, the media, the members of the media, being too hard on college players. Listen to what he had to say about how his players are now treated.
When I say I genuinely love these kids, I genuinely really do. It's not about what they can do for me on the football field. It's about what I can help them with in life. Landscape has changed in football. Once upon a time, you guys never attacked college players. Now they're making more money than y'all. And some of y'all are envious and jealous about that. So you're on the tech. It was hands off a college player because he's an amateur. You remember? Remember that, guys? Now it's hands on. Go at them any kind of way you want. They're making more money than me, and I'm mad about it. When you attack them, attack them, attack them, these guys are sensitive. They've never been attacked. They hadn't gone through what a grown man, what I've been going through with y'all for years. They haven't done that. So it is what it is. I know you're going to do your job and what you must do, but your job does not say in attack. The personal stuff, leave it to be personal, because if we start flipping the script on y'all, you wouldn't like it. I can ease it. Thank you, Lord, for stopping me there. Whoo, that was almost a good one. That would have went viral.
He's claiming he's going to dig up some dirt on you for starters, Alex, so just be careful. He probably does have enough money to dig up dirt on any of us, so I'll give him that, although I've pretty much admitted to all the crime I've committed on this show.
Yeah,
so good luck, Deion. I've already admitted it.
A couple things with what he said there. Number one, college players have been making more than you and I for a very long time. Let me just be clear.
Very, very clear.
So that's not new. It's just out in the open. We know exactly what some of these kids are making now. And generally, I think at one point in time, there was a thought that you assessed, if you will, in your
amateur
coverage, an 18 or 19-year-old from a football perspective differently than the 28-year-old making $50 million in the NFL. I think that part's true. But it has been a long time since we were there, and I don't think it's anything new to be critical overall. And the other part is, yeah, I mean, the fact that there's a 19 or 20-year-old that we know is making $2 million, they probably are going to be viewed differently. And I don't know what personal attack he's in particular talking about. I don't follow the Colorado Buffaloes on a weekly basis. So I don't know if somebody wrote something about his son or whatever. I honestly have no idea after what prompted that rant. But it's not, you're acting like Colorado is the first program that's ever had anybody critical of in their coverage. Like, that's what's mind-boggling to me. Go to the SEC and see how they cover Alabama or Ole Miss when they have a bad game or bad performance. I can promise you they're critical of those players as well.
The thing that he's referencing, I think, is post-game in the Colorado State game. I don't know if you guys saw it. I don't know if you guys even watched the game. They're doing the post-game handshakes and everything like that. Colorado State's quarterback have been talking a lot of smack, saying they're going to learn today and all this other stuff. Goes up to Shador, tries to like shake his hand, and Shador's like, "I heard what you said about us and everything like that. I'm not about that.
That's player to player. We didn't have anything to do with that.
Don't say what you said and then come at me trying to be friendly." And he was like, he basically was like, "I'm not shaking your hand."
Okay.
And I think that's where people were like, "Look, you need to." And there was criticism of Shador, like, "Yeah, this is bad leadership and all this other stuff."
He is a terrible.
And that's where Deion is getting it from. I think in the end, look, guys can talk as much smack as they want to. I didn't see Chiefs players saying, "I'm not shaking your hand, Jamar. I'm not going up to you, Cam Taylor Britt." You know, I think that's where the criticism came from that caused Deion to say this now, in my opinion.
We're drawing an invisible line. He's saying, "I can't make fun of them if they're 19, but if they're 21 and a pro in the NFL, I can say whatever the hell I want about them." They are, in some cases, making millions of dollars. If I was a radio host at 19 years old in a full-time midday show, it would not stop the text line from calling me an idiot. Like, "I'm sorry that you have a public-facing job now in which you make hundreds of thousands of dollars." Do I think we should ever make it personal about players? No. Should you attack their family life? No. Should you attack their personal beliefs? No. Can I call them a bad football player if they're playing bad football? Yeah. That was always on the table. It's just even more on the table now that they make hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's a bit rich, though, also, coming from
Deion Sanders.
Deion Sanders,
his kid's been burying everybody.
Well, I mean, and his kid is his kid, and he's always going to have his kids back, as he should. But I'm just saying, for Deion, the minute he showed up to Boulder, Colorado, we all know the viral video that was released that time. He walks into the team room. He's got the entire team. He talks about bringing his luggage and it's Louis and all this. And the reports are, in terms of how he handled certain players, to run them out of the program, which happens at a lot of schools, by the way. But I'm like, don't try to act like that. You know, I mean, you've treated
everybody
perfectly.
But they're amateurs, so maybe don't just tell everyone, "Get the hell out. You stink." Well, yeah. Treat them like kids.
And you can go back. I think somebody asked, what year is the "I'm a man" quote? I know we looked it up. 2007, 8, something like that. Yeah. This has been, as you guys said, it's been going on for a long time where, especially as you mentioned, Gold, in the SEC, like, if somebody is not playing good football, they're going to mention it, but it's not, you can't just baby them. And if somebody, Jalen Daniels, the conversation around him should be that he's not playing good football or not. Well, you know, just give him some more time because he's Jalen Daniels. And if he's playing bad football in the moment and you're talking about it and you're covering whatever team it is, you have to bring it up and it's got to be mentioned. You just have to go about it in a way that's respectful, which I think,
yeah, you don't have to turn it personal. That's all.
Everybody for the most part has. It's just Deion knows it. And I think he's just bad. I think that's what it was. He felt offended a little bit more because it was Shador getting attacked for the post game stuff.
Drew, if it was isolated, I think I would understand it more. I would understand it more if it was isolated. The problem is, a week ago, though, you know, he was upset with the coverage of something else about his team, so he kicked some beat writer off the beat or whatever.
Yes,
like, if it was this one thing, I think it's fine. But it's like every week there's some gripe with the media, and everybody's out to get him, and things aren't, you know, whatever. So we'll see. Right. I don't know who Colorado's playing this week or whatever. We've got to go to break.
That's also what happens when you talk a lot, too. You're asking for the criticism when it's there.
All right, coming up next, after 2 weeks in, are we more or less confident in history being made by this team? Plus the trash of the day, coming up next.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.